Tuesday, January 13th. I'm Dave Rabin, joined by my co-host, Ray Valencia. Later in the show, Ray will talk with the activist Tracer Frazier about the attempt to regulate AI in Prince George County and how Trump is attempting to preempt such efforts with an executive order. But first, Norman Solomon is out with a new book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell, How Corporate Democrats Pave the Way for Autocracy. Solomon talks about the factors that service to corporate power, hostility to the progressive wings of the parliament, out of control militarism, and disconnection from the base of the working class contributed to declining support for the party's platform and candidates. So what could be done about that? We're joined now by journalist and activist Norman Solomon, author of more than a dozen books, including War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, and which was adopted into a 27 documentary narrated by Sean Penn. He's also the National Director of Roots Action and Executive Director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. Norman Solomon, welcome to Community Watch and Comment. It's great to have you.
Hey, thanks very much, David.
It's great having you, and we welcome callers 202-588-0893. This is Community Watch and Comment. We need your comments, so please chime in. Before we jump in, Norman, what's Roots Action? Tell us about Roots Action before we go to the context of our interview.
Roots Action is a national group. It is online. It is activist. It is independent of any political party. And it is a force for human rights, environmental protection, democracy, ending the funding of these endless wars that come in various forms out of the taxpayers' pockets in terms of funding. And we've seen just in recent days and weeks how in many different forms the militarism, what Martin Luther King called the madness of militarism, continues to manifest itself in so many different ways. So people can sign up for alerts, rootsaction.org, and we have 1.2 million people who have done so, and we are pushing for genuine progressive change.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. I mean, Trump is talking about, we've already got a $1 trillion military budget, and Trump is talking about a 50% increase in that budget. I mean, it's extraordinarily important for people to be aware of the kind of work that you're doing. And what's the Institute for Public Accuracy?
Well, under the leadership of the senior analyst and media director, Sam Husseini, for 25 years now, the Institute for Public Accuracy has been a lifeline for many journalists who are looking for independent sources, who are not just the usual, what we call, used to call, in the Rolodex, the just same old people who are often simply part of the bipartisan establishment. So people can find our information, which provides more than 300 different news releases a year with various sources. You can find it at accuracy.org online.
So let's break down how the Dems have paved the way to autocracy, as you say. Maybe best summed up by the Dems' refusal to release their 2024 autopsy report on losing the 2024 election. You say there's not much difference between the Democrats' losses in 2016, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, and 2024. Let's break that down. The Dems service to corporate power. Let's get into that. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, as you mentioned, when you look at what happened in 2016, the loss of Hillary Clinton to Trump, Trump's first victory, and then go ahead and look at what has happened in 2024. There are a lot of similarities. In point of fact, my colleagues at Roots Action have produced an autopsy which was released weeks ago about the 2024 election. People can find it online, and here's a URL for it, democraticautopsy.org. And what we found when we compared it to our autopsy that we had done after 2016 is that one could basically, in many cases, change the names from Hillary Clinton to Kamala Harris or vice versa, and the same problems were there. Here you had a candidate in 2016 who claimed to be supporting working people but was very enmeshed with corporate power. Hillary Clinton took a single check more than once, $250,000 or so, for one speech to Wall Street, to the big banks, had been enmeshed for decades with huge corporate interests, and yet would turn around and say, "Hey, I'm a candidate for working people." Well, in 2024, there was much the same tune out from Kamala Harris, who would talk about, yes, there is too much inflation, but never really take to task or challenge or provide any programmatic strategy or proposals to really point to the cause of the inflation, basically price gouging by huge corporations. Another example would be that Kamala Harris was dismissive of and refusing to respond to the dominant view, according to pollsters, not only among Democrats, but among voters as a whole, that they wanted an end to arming Israel while it continued to slaughter children, men, and women in Gaza, what was clearly becoming genocide. And so you have this gap where the Democratic Party leadership is in its own world. It is in almost hermetically sealed Capitol Hill bubble right now. And then you have the base of the party, which on many issues is much more progressive and wants enactment of proposals like enhanced Medicare for all, wants proposals like free public college for all, wants to raise taxes on the wealthy and big corporations. And yet those proposals are non-starters with people like Hakeem Jeffries, people like Chuck Schumer. And so really, in essence, the problem boils down to a Democratic Party leadership, and I use leadership, in only scare quotes in some ways, that is not responsive to the base of the party. And so we had this huge drop-off of millions of votes, 6 or 7 million votes, between 2020 for the Democratic ticket and 2024. So that's the gist, I think, of the deep rut that the Democratic Party has found itself in, that continues to be in. And meanwhile, we have this horrific administration, the Trump regime, which is trying to knock down and destroy the basic democratic structures of this country. So that's why I wrote the book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell. And people can find it online for free. If they don't want to buy the book, fine. But it is available as an ebook, as a PDF, in complete form, released simultaneously with the print edition. And you can find The Blue Road to Trump Hell. Download it, read it at blueroad.info. That's online at blueroad.info.
Yeah, I mean it's rather striking. I think we can say that in 2024, Kamala Harris ran a top-down campaign, $1.5 billion spent in 107 days, a short-lived campaign, lots of TV ads, corporate-type consultants. Those consultants don't, I think we can say, reflect the aspirants of the bottom ground populace. If you could talk about that.
Yeah, well, I wrote this book in real time. You didn't have to be a rocket scientist or much of a social scientist to know at the time that first, Joe Biden should never have run for re-election. And this is not hindsight. At rootsaction.org, we launched Don't Run Joe in 2022 in November, saying this shouldn't happen. The guy is not competent to run a strong campaign in 2024. And that was obvious. And yet, again, sealed off from the base of the party, members of Congress with a D after their name simply remained silent throughout 2023 into 2024 until the disastrous debate. And I should say that I wrote The Blue Road to Trump Hell in real time, and I did not go back with hindsight because it wasn't necessary to go back by hindsight. This was written, as I say, in real time, contemporaneously of events. And so I think that's important because we now need to also look at what's happening in real time and be willing to challenge the refusal of the Democratic Party to really put up a fight to directly challenge the assumptions and approaches of what is now a fascistic regime, a fascistic Republican Party. People may be thinking, well, oh yeah, okay, maybe, but why focus your challenge? Why talk about what's wrong with the Democrats? This country is under a fascistic executive and legislative branch control of the Republican Party. Just talk about them. Well, of course, the Republicans are terrible in what they're doing. Let us count the ways. We could go on for many hours detailing all that. At the same time, unless we have the Democratic Party willing and able to be connected to the base, willing and able to respond to voters and really get the turnout that is necessary to defeat Republicans, then we're going to be unable to really get rid of this horrendous regime in the two branches of government that largely now has so much of leverage over the Republican appointed Supreme Court justices as well. So this is really about learning from history, being real about what actually happened. Orwell said, those who control the past control the future. Those who control the present control the past. So the narrative about what has actually happened in the partisan arena is really crucial if we're going to understand, and most of all, how we're going to not repeat the mistakes of the past.
Yeah, I mean, there's not enough talk about the enormous gap between the wealth and the unwealthy in this country. I'm reminded of the quote, the wonderful quote, the important quote from former Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. You can have a democracy in this country, or we can have great wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both. I think he said that in the 30s, and it's extraordinarily important and pertinent. And we want to hear from caller 202-588-0893. This is Community Watch and Comment. We want to hear from our listeners. Please chime in 202-588-0893. Your thoughts, Norman Solomon, about Louis Brandeis's comment about the disparity of wealth in this country, which is even more, I think, extreme than when he was saying this back in the 30s.
Well, it's supposed to be in effect for governance of the country. One person, one vote, not $1, one vote, not what kind of economic leverage can be brought to bear on government policy by the wealthy. And as you allude to, I mean, this was an issue in the 30s, overcoming the great power of wealth was central to being able to enact the New Deal. And today, by any measure, the power of the wealthy is much greater, to the detriment of the vast majority of the people. And one of the things I point out in the book is that the failure of the Democratic Party to really align with working class voters and their needs has been really central to this. As Bernie Sanders has said, if you are wondering why the working class abandoned the Democratic Party in 2024, it's because the Democratic Party abandoned the working class, and that needs to be reversed as a problem and needs to be moved into the realm of solution, or we're going to be stuck with the bogus pseudo-populism of the Republican Party being able to prevail. You can't defeat the racist, xenophobic pseudo-populism of the Republican Party with sort of milquetoast, middle-of-the-road, so-called moderate failure to align with working people programmatically that has continued to typify the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, just because there's abhorrence of the current Republican regime doesn't mean that the Democrats are stepping up with a successful alternative. And I think that's what you're talking about. And part of the problem is the hostility of the Democratic Party to the progressive wing. It goes back to 2016. If you could talk about that and the ongoing abhorrence of the mainstream of the Democratic leadership to alternatives in the Democratic Party, if you could talk about that.
Well, I cite in this book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell, and let me reiterate, it is available. It's a new book available free online. All people have to do is go to blueroad.info. One of the many reflections of the dynamic you just mentioned, David, is that I document in the book a study by Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting that found that in the first Bernie Sanders campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination, when Bernie was running very strong, it was just before the Michigan primary, and the Washington Post published 16 anti-Bernie Sanders articles in 16 hours. Can you imagine? How do you publish 16 articles negative towards a presidential candidate in 16 hours? Well, you do it if it's a newspaper that is owned by a gazillionaire who pretended at the time his politics didn't affect the newspaper. We now know it's flagrant. People have quit the Post en masse as journalists because of the insistence on stopping an editorial to endorse Kamala Harris for president in 2024. It just, the mask has fallen off the Washington Post. And it's been reflected, hidden perhaps in costume, but the book chronicles how the Post and other mass media, in tandem with the hierarchy of the Democratic Party, had basically tried to, as you mentioned, crush the progressive wing of the party. Jesse Jackson said way back in 1988, it takes two wings to fly. And when people running the Democratic Party basically try to unhinge and drop one wing, the left wing of the party, we've seen the result in 2016 and again in 2024 in terms of the presidential election.
Yep. I think we have a caller, and this is a community watching comment. I appreciate folks calling in. Caller, if your question, if you care to give your name and where you're calling from and your question or comment, please.
Oh, hi. Oh, hold on.
Welcome.
We've seen the result.
This is Alan calling from Washington. So I would like to ask your guest about something he has touched upon but hasn't elaborated on, which is what has happened with environmental protection. And it is really a madhouse in the last year. My understanding from history studies is that modern environmental protection emerged in the 1920s with control of lead, but it was a failed regime, and the failure of that regime demonstrated that the principles it ran on were not able to control pollution. So in the late 1960s and then reaching into the 90s, we had lots of environmental action from Congress. And it's dissipated ever since. And now we're at the point where they're reversing even the basic principles of the 1970 Clean Air Act. Do you want to speak to the politics of how that reversal came about?
Yeah, thank you. I think you make a lot of good points.
Thank
we
you
can
for
recall,
calling.
For instance, I think we could recall that in 1970 was the first Earth Day, and it reflected this upsurge of activism. What propels necessary vital change is always coming from the grassroots. And so even President Richard Nixon supported the establishment of the Environmental Protection Agency, and we had some real step forward events in the 1970s, which were somewhat throttled in the 1980s by the Reagan administration. But things have gone even much way worse in the last years under Republican regimes. It was bad under George W. Bush in the first years of this century, and it's been really horrific, especially under Trump and in the last year, as the caller alluded to. And the politics are such that when corporate power has so much leverage over policy, and then compounding that dynamic, you have Republicans in the White House and running the House and the Senate, then, as the caller said, it's a madhouse. This is a full assault on the web of life on this planet. And it's one aspect, whether it's the assault on basic sanity about climate or pollution, effluents, what's coming out of factories, clean water. You know, this is a sort of a species suicide that the humans who are now in charge of national policy are dragging the human race into, because the U.S. has such huge impact on the ecology of the planet. This is about survival. This is about the future of the children who are presently on this earth. What kind of future do they have on a planet that's being assaulted and despoiled in its ecological essence by the Republican Party? And when Democrats in leadership don't call this out, don't challenge the mainstream of this dynamic, the corporate leverage over national policy, then we have a sort of a pseudo debate, and we don't really have the capacity to go to the mat and fight effectively for ecological protection.
Yeah. I mean, it's an extraordinarily serious moment. I should say that in speaking with Norman Solomon, who's out with a new book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell, How Corporate Democrats Paved the Way for Autocracy. If you could talk, Norman, about the hostility to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. I mean, going back to 2016, I mean, there was a whole engineering of Hillary Clinton over Bernie in that year. And we're talking about Hillary Clinton, who, you know, I mean, I think it's encased by her endorsement of Cuomo in the mayoral race in last year. I mean, it kind of says it all. I mean, she endorsed Cuomo, the opponent of victorious mayoral candidate Mondamo in the New York City mayoral election.
Yeah, well, we've had a very much of a switcheroo coming from candidates such as Hillary Clinton, where they say, oh, we want to support Democratic candidates. And to take an example, the only anti-choice Democrat in the House, Henry Cuellar, was saved in his reelection campaign a few years ago by then Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. And it was an extremely close result where the progressive challenger to Henry Cuellar, who was subsequently indicted for bribery and then pardoned by President Trump. Cuellar only won re-election against a progressive candidate because of the intervention of Nancy Pelosi to support him in a primary. And the argument is, oh, you have to support the Democrat who's an incumbent. But then you turn around, and as you allude to, David, when you have a sexual predator and a corporate pawn in the name of Cuomo, the former governor of New York, losing the Democratic primary in New York City last year, then you had people in the Democratic Party establishment, not all of them, but some of them either refusing to endorse a Brooklyn guy who is the minority leader of the Senate, Schumer, refuses to endorse the Democratic Party candidate who has been chosen by the Democratic voters. And then you allude to, as well, Hillary Clinton, you know, who's sticking with Cuomo. You had the New York Times just freaking out because the Democratic Socialist was on track to be elected mayor. And that's because ultimately the loyalty is to corporate power. And in that case, also to what now we can say quite accurately is a genocidal regime, the Israeli government, continuing to get massive quantities of weaponry from the United States.
I mean, it's just extraordinary how that relationship with Israel cannot be broken. I mean, it's really rather amazing. So you've got this mainstream antagonism against the progressive wing of the progressive elements of the Democratic Party, and you allude to this out of control militarism. I mean, it's just inconceivable, the support of the Democratic Party from Biden on into the Democratic mainstream currently for the support of Israel. I mean, we're talking about genocide in Gaza, and yet the Democratic Party is not able to let loose of that.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about the hierarchy of the Democratic Party and its hostility to the progressive wing and progressive voters. In fact, we could say it's a hostility from the top of the Democratic Party towards Democratic voters nationwide. And here's a couple of examples which have been so horribly real. The polling, as I talk about in my book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell, again, free at blueroad.info, what I talk about is that the polling was clear in 2023 into 2024. Most Democrats, by a wide margin, did not want Joe Biden to run for re-election as president. And yet we could hardly find any Democrats in Congress even willing to say that out loud. They would say it sometimes privately, but not publicly. And so you had contempt for Democratic voters from Democrats in Congress. And Biden kept running for re-election catastrophically, catastrophe, until it was too late. Well, here's another example. We had polling very clear that if Kamala Harris had come out for an arms embargo on Israel in the late summer and fall of 2024, she would have, according to the clear polling, like from pollsters like YouGov, she would have picked up many more votes in swing states and elsewhere. But she again manifested contempt for Democratic voters and what they wanted.
Yeah. I mean, it's a serious problem that we have here. I should say that I'm speaking with Norman Solomon, journalist and author of a new book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell, How Corporate Democrats Pave the Way to Autocracy. And I think we're experiencing autocracy right now, and we're going to get more to that in a moment. Norman, if you could talk about the disconnection from the base, the Democratic disconnection from the base of the working class. I mean, I think it's really important to understand that both in 2016 and 2024.
Yeah, the polling is very clear. Exit polls in past years, polling in general. When you ask voters, and this is not only Democrats, but across the board, you say, would you like Medicare for all, for everyone? Would you like enhanced Medicare for all? Would you like to get rid of the cap on Social Security so that rich people would pay more in Social Security taxes? If you would ask people, oh, do you think there should be free public college in this country? Should there be the subsidies to provide free or low cost child care? Should there be enhanced elder care? These are proposals that poll way up in the 60s, 70s, 80% of support in this country. And yet we have a leadership, a word I use advisedly, leadership, Hakeem Jeffries, Chuck Schumer, they can't bring themselves to advocate for and really fight for those kind of proposals. And it leaves the field open to these bogus, phony, pseudo-populists who are running the Republican Party to claim that they're on the side of working, wannabe working people. And this is a problem. It's not only about the past. Unless we can have a more clear understanding, a much more clear understanding of how we got into this mess, then this horrific mess of the Trump regime, then we haven't really found a way to get out of this mess going forward.
No. You're not necessarily talking about a third party. I think you're talking about primarily a reinvigoration, if you will, of the Democratic Party. You could talk about that. I mean, I think it's important to understand that Bernie Sanders did not run as a third party, did not run in 2016 and 2020 as a Green Party candidate. He ran within the Democratic primary. If you could talk about what you're advocating for in terms of reform at the Democratic Party.
I'm definitely not advocating for a third party on among progressives on the left. I would like there to be third parties on the right to fractionate Republican strength. But in 40 years, the Green Party has never come close to electing a single member of Congress. That ought to tell us something about the structural realities of political governmental power in this country. If AOC had run third party, she wouldn't be in Congress. If Rashida Tlaib or Ilhan Omar or Summer Lee or other progressives who are now in Congress had run as third party, they wouldn't be in Congress. This is just reality. And we have this necessity. It doesn't matter whether we like the Democratic Party or don't like the Democratic Party. What matters is that in this two-party system, the structural reality is that the only way to get these fascistic Republicans out of control of the federal government and to keep them out of control is for a wide range of people who are anti-fascist, who want a decent society, to really build a strong Democratic Party and make it work. Is that fun? Is it pleasant? Is it not frustrating? Of course, it's often extremely frustrating, but that work needs to be done.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of looking to the future, the Mondami victory in the mayoral election in New York points to a possible future. Of course, New York City is not the United States of America, but it's hopeful.
Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, Seattle just elected at the same time as Mondomini in New York. You go across the country to Seattle, Washington, Democratic Socialist mayor now, who ran as an activist, not for corporate power, but for people power. And that is the path of the future, to give some hope. People need hope, not based on fantasies, but the hard work that is necessary to turn this country around.
Yeah. We're going to have to end it there. I've been speaking with Norman Solomon, journalist and author and activist. He's the author of a new book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell, How Corporate Democrats Paved the Way for Autocracy and Autocracy that We're Experiencing Right Now. Norman Solomon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And on to our next guest. Take it away, Ray Valencia.
Good afternoon. Hi, David, did you let Taylor into the Zoom? I think she's in the waiting.
Are you?
Good afternoon. Did you get Taylor on? Yeah, let's take a quick break. Thank you so much, Mike.
Inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
On Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist MLK and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. From 9 a.m. until noon, we examine the Pan-Africanist legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. From noon until midnight, we center Haiti, her history, triumphs, troubles, and culture. That's Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist MLK and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight. WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
The Birchmere presents Derek Gripper and Balake Sissoko, January 14th. Avery Sunshine, January 17th. Will Downing, January 30th and 31st. And Babatunde Hip Hopra, February 1st. Details at birchmere.com.
Good afternoon. Have you experienced higher electric bills this year? Are you concerned about the development of data center infrastructure in your neighborhood? Well, in last September, Prince George County, Maryland issued a six-month moratorium on new data center development. This includes proposed projects such as the former Landover Mall. There is intense community opposition over environmental infrastructure and quality of life concerns. The pause will allow the county task force to study best practices, potential impacts on the community, and to develop recommendations for future data center locations and regulations. Residents are concerned about the increased noise, water, and energy use, and the transformation of neighborhoods by large industrial facilities. While developers are emphasizing the potential benefits like jobs and tax revenue, joining the show to talk about this today is Taylor Fraser McCollum. She led the change.org petition that led to the moratorium. She has been an advocate for the environment in her local community and has worked in politics for many years. Taylor continues to champion progressive politics and is a member of the Green Party. Taylor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you back. And we talked a few months ago when the moratorium was first in effect. Can you give us an update? What are you learning?
Yes. Oh, sure. So the county executive and the county council issued separate moratoriums. And the county executive's moratorium expired on December 31st of 2025. And then the county council's moratorium will expire sometime in the end of March, beginning of April of this year. So we do still have time. The Qualified Data Center Task Force has released their report. So we're just waiting on the public kind of analysis for that report or a meeting on that report by the county council so that they can disclose all of the information that's in the report.
Great. And what area does the moratorium affect? Is it all of PG County?
Yes, it's all of Prince George's County, and it's just a Prince George's County moratorium. We haven't gotten a statewide moratorium yet.
Right, I understand that. Hey, we would really like to hear from you, our listeners. How do you feel about these proposed data center development in the DMV? Please call in. You can call us at 202-588-0893. Now, Taylor, you led the signature drive. What got you involved?
Well, once I found out about the proposal in 2025, it was a little behind the eight ball because we had missed the opportunity to kind of challenge the planning board's decision. So as I was doing my research, I kind of thought back to like what I thought would be most effective. And even though I know sometimes change.org petitions don't make it to completion of the goal, I knew it would be a great way to bring awareness. So I started there with creating that change.org petition. And then I self-promoted it for a good 3 or 4 months before the Party for Socialism and Liberation found the petition. And then they kind of reached out to me to link up and do a reel on Instagram. And once that went viral, that's what allowed us to attain so many signatures. It's just bringing that awareness to everyone in the community that this was something that was proposed and we could stop it.
Well, because it's been a really a grassroots effort. And I know a lot of groups are up against, you know, counties that are seeking more tax revenue. I mean, there's an incentive right now for data centers. I just read an article about a garden center in Merrifield in Fairfax, Virginia. They were offered $160 million for their property. And, you know, that's a lot of money. It's hard to turn down. And so you're up against that. And we have regulations that we have the Trump administration that has just announced through a series of executive orders to limit state level regulations on data centers. So how are you feeling about that?
It's deeply concerning. For starters, the Trump administration is just full of challenges and issues to give it a nice term. Trump has a cryptocurrency business, World Liberty Financial, and that was opened after he was reelected in 2025. And they brought in, not just with that one company, but just Trump's companies across the board, $4 billion in proceeds and paper money since he was reelected. So it's like, if you're putting out a form of legislation or an executive order that's going to fast track AI data centers, which we know are highly linked to cryptocurrency, then that means that you're padding your own pockets. You're filling yourself with money. So it also concerns me that he's trying to use public lands to build on for data centers. These public lands, in the document, it says that it's for like our security and prosperity as Americans or something. And it's like, I can't believe that. Like, you're poisoning our air and our water and telling us for the greater good of the community. You know, we know that these are not true statements. We know that the Trump administration is filled with misrepresentations. So I think that it's unfortunate that he passed that executive order, but I do think that states will have a chance to fight back. And I think that we will be able to kind of show our support. Like, how do you run on a platform that wants to put states first, but then you're telling states they have no rights when it comes to AI data centers? So it's very
exactly. Bad. And this is becoming a concern even among Republicans and red states. Like in the state of Texas, where a lot of the data centers are developed because there's not a lot of regulation to develop them, they're being told by the power company, hey, we're going to shut you off when we have power surges and rolling blackouts.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everyone's confronted with these higher electric costs. You know, and I often think about that. You know, your house on the block with solar energy or solar panels, you're okay, but your neighbor may not have that ability to make that capital investment, or maybe live in an apartment. So you're just subject to these higher costs, while so many billionaires are benefiting from the AI boom. And Bloomberg just reported that it's estimated anywhere from $3 to $7 trillion is going to be spent on data center development between now and 2030. That's just a huge number and a huge incentive to really drive through any kind of state level regulation. I think it's going to become an issue that's more important to people as we get into the midterms. Are you feeling that? Are you thinking this is like something that more people are getting aware of, and how do you recommend that folks, you know, do something about it, like write to Congress or?
Yes, well, behind the scenes, a group of us that are data center activists are working together, mm-hmm. and I was unable to sign up to testify, but they'll be testifying before Congress soon on data centers and giving their perspective. Mm-hmm. What I encourage local residents that maybe don't have the ability to testify before Congress or write into Congress is to participate in your local activist organizations. Find an organization near you and get involved in that organization. Link up with, you know, people who are actively trying to support the same causes that you are supporting. So we will be stronger in greater numbers. I think that we also have to bring a lot of awareness to the issues. A lot of people mm-hmm. aren't on social media. They aren't paying attention to the news. We have to bring it to their doorstep. So that's been a big part of our campaign, is door-to-door outreach or community outreach, where we go post up at an event and pass out flyers and, you know, basically market the cause, because you have to. Not everyone's paying attention mm-hmm. to the same channels of media. So we have to be Absolutely. Able to spread the word to those local community members.
Now, your focus initially started with the Landover Mall in PG County, but you're working on neighboring areas too. And you're probably following the data center development that's happening in Montgomery County, right? The Dickerson Project. Can you yes. update us on like the progress of that and another potential landing sites for these large-scale data centers?
Yes. So with Dickerson, they're actually proposing that 292 acres of the 758-acre site be turned into like three different data center campuses. So that's a lot of space. That's actually more than three times the size of the Landover Mall site. So reopening coal plant would cause so much damage. Coal ash is very harmful to the lungs. Mm-hmm. It's very heavy, thick particulate matter. So it's like, why would we go backwards and reopen something when we know there's clean energy coming down the pipeline? Like when we know there's other ways that we can power things without having to use dirty energy. And I think that it's unfortunate that at the Dickerson site, they do slightly have support of the county executive, because he did speak out and say that there are places in Montgomery County that would be prime for a data center. So I think that's unfortunate that the county representatives in both Prince George's and Montgomery County are missing the mark mm-hmm. of how this is going to affect the environment long term. We are already seeing studies come out that say living near data centers is increasing your risk of cancer. We already know that there are increased risks of lung conditions. So why do we want to push that on the public so badly just to gain a dollar? We have to really think about putting people over profits. And I think that that's something that's missing right now in our current politics scene. We definitely don't have that focus. And then the other property that I'm watching is the one that's in Frederick, Maryland. I don't know all the details about that one up there, but they are trying to propose a data center in Frederick. I don't know if it's officially been passed or, you know, has all the documents needed to move forward, but I am trying to monitor and follow that. But there are so many fights across the country to follow. It's literally an everyday struggle to keep up
with
the
news. Yeah. And I've been following like what's happening in Tennessee and other areas where the data centers are already developed. And what's of alarming concern is that there's such a rush to build them. That and there's been such strain on the power grid that the idea is that data centers build their own power plant. So it's like a full stack, the power plant to drive the AI factory. When we talk about data centers, you know, they originally started right for cloud and internet, and then it expanded to crypto mining. And now they're AI factories, and each level of this thing is just requiring vast amounts more of energy. And it's creating this, you know, just this mess for people. And Bernie Sanders really is talking about the inequality of this and how it's affecting people. And he is proposing a nationwide moratorium on data center development. So that seems to be getting some traction as well. We also have this unique situation where the DMV is sit atop of the subsea communication lines. And it's really important for data centers to be on those, on that track. So like Northern Virginia is known as Data Center Alley. So there's real push for the government because of national security concerns and Department of Defense to plant these things in the DMV. So yeah. That's another challenge if the government deems these to be like a part of essential infrastructure for security purposes.
Yes.
Right. But the environmental concern, too, is if they're building their own stack and they're doing so in a hurry, the impact that that could have, like, what are they using? Are they using coal? Exactly. Are they using fossil? Right.
Yep. Yep.
And the administration has not been friendly to solar and wind.
Exactly. I don't know if you know, they just halted, mm-hmm. like, I think it was like 40 projects or something
yes.
for wind power. And one of them was in Virginia. So,
yeah. Yeah. So this is, definitely something we want to keep in touch with you as we follow this into the 2026 midterms. Also just, I just feel like it's kind of a form of techno-feudalism because they're using properties that are in neighborhoods that are often occupied by people of color and lower income working class neighborhoods. And they're also suffering from the most, dealing with the high energy cost and polluted water in there. Yeah. So thank you so much, Taylor. Listen, can you tell folks where they can find your work and where they can follow what you're doing?
Yes. If you're on Instagram, you can find me at Tailored FM, TayloredFM FM. And you can also follow the No Land Over Data Facebook, Instagram page, which mm-hmm. is at No Land Over Data. And we will be having a meeting on January 17th from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. at the Bladensburg Library in Bladensburg, Maryland. So if anybody's able to attend that, once you, if you haven't already signed the petition, the link to the petition is in my bio on Instagram, and you'll get all the updates as well when we send those out on a regular basis as we have community meetings and actions that we need people to take.
Great. And I noticed on your Facebook page, you are affiliated with other groups and other areas nationwide. So,
yes.
So we could follow what's going on in Tennessee. We can, where's the other major data center? There's Tennessee with Google, right? No, that's Elon Musk.
Yes.
XAI.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then you've got Meta down in Georgia, and then you also have Meta in Texas. So right.
We don't even know what the one in Landover Mall is going to be. We have no
idea. Exactly. No idea.
So that's the interesting. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, Taylor. Again, we really appreciate your time and have a great day.
All right. You too. And I look forward to speaking with you guys again. It's been amazing.
Yes. We're going to bring you back for an update for sure.
Awesome.
Thanks again.
Take care. Okay.
Thank you so much. All right.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. Bringing it local here in the DMV area. And that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to the amazing Mike Nasella for his engineering expertise. Coming up, don't forget the
inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
On Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist MLK and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. From 9 a.m. until noon, we examine the Pan-Africanist legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. From noon until midnight, we center Haiti, her history, triumphs, troubles, and culture. That's Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist MLK and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic, Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight. WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
The Birchmere presents Derek Gripper and Balake Sissoko, January 14th. Avery Sunshine, January 17th, Will Downing, January 30th and 31st, and Babatunde Hip Hopra, February 1st. Details at birchmere.com.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis is already impacting our lives and what you can do about it. So tune in every Friday at 9 o'clock a.m. right here on WPFW 89.3, your jazz and justice station.
Greetings, everybody, and peace. My name is Anthony Rogers Wright, host of the new program, Full Spectrum, 360 degrees of analysis and discussion of domestic and global politics. This program also includes commentary and interviews with subject experts from around the country and the world. Full Spectrum also includes a segment called Burr Notice, offering listeners a rare and seldom take on the climate crisis from an unapologetically Black perspective. That's Full Spectrum every Tuesday at 6 p.m. beginning August 12th, right here on WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justice wherever you are.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, Washington.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Thank you. David.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know this is not protocol and all this, but for the first time in her life, one of the greatest persons in my life is in here tonight to hear me sing.